This is the Rich Keefe Show on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
I like it. Fourth and final hour of the Rich Keefe Show here on WEEI, and we talked a lot about the Celtics and their loss from last night. Now, back-to-back losses down in Florida for the Seas, including one where, yeah, they were completely undermanned last night, but Joe Mazzulla choosing not to call timeouts, and they end up losing to the Miami Heat by 3 points. Bruins, meanwhile, just are nasty. Like, they are so far and away. Like, they are... just win every night, it feels like. When they lose, it's shocking. Shocking when they lose. So they won again last night. They beat Montreal. They are off tonight. Both Celtics and Bruins off tonight. And then we got a little bit into the Patriots coaching staff as well. Still seems like it's up in the air on Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, Nick Caley. No official announcement, but none of those three are with the team at the East-West Shrine Bowl. So there is that. Also, what we got today was a little NFL awards. How about this? You got a little, the finalists for all the different awards in the league. And so they have the five finalists for the most valuable player. And I feel like this one is going to be probably unanimous this year. I don't know if Patrick Mahomes doesn't get every single vote, but they at least gave you five finalists anyway. And it's the big three from the AFC: Mahomes, Allen, and Burrow. It's Jalen Hurts, the season that he has had with Philly, and Justin Jefferson. So, good for Justin Jefferson for even getting on that list. Had an absolute monster year. Their team won a lot of games. I know they were frauds, and they lost in the first round of the playoffs or whatever, but Justin Jefferson was pretty damn good. He, I think at the beginning of the year, said that he wanted to be the best receiver in the league, and you can make the case. Maybe you like Devontae Adams, maybe you like Jamar Chase, but... Justin Jefferson's right in the mix. And you look at the season that he had. First of all, it's impossible for a wide receiver or a running back to win the MVP now. Just always goes to a quarterback. Cooper Kupp didn't win the MVP. And that guy led the league in everything and set all kinds of records for catches, touchdowns, yards. Justin Jefferson this year, 128 catches, 1,809 yards, and 8 touchdowns. So again, good for him for getting a finalist for MVP, but he's not going to win. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes, the second MVP. And it's funny, we talked earlier about how in hockey, the team that has the best record, the President's Trophy winner, almost never wins the Stanley Cup recently. It's like two in the last 20 years. There's also a crazy stat about the MVP of the league not winning the Super Bowl. It like never happens. Or at least it's very few and far between recently. And so Patrick Mahomes is going to try to do both. But I'd be shocked if he didn't win this. The AP Defensive Player of the Year, three finalists, Nick Bosa, Chris Jones, Micah Parsons. I think Nick Bosa is going to win. I like Micah Parsons better. Like, if I could have one defensive player on my team, I think I would pick Micah Parsons. But I feel like they're going to go with Nick Bosa. And you can't go wrong. Both had really good defenses. Bosa had a million sacks this year. I think it was like 18 and a half, which led the league. So I think it's going to go to Bosa. Chris Jones was really good, too. Chris Jones is a big fella, 15 and a half sacks. So he tied Matt Judon for, I think, fourth this year. So I think that's an easy one, though. I think it's going to be Nick Bosa as well. Offensive Player of the Year, the finalists are Tyreek Hill, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, and Patrick Mahomes. Now, again, it seems odd that a guy could be the MVP and not the Offensive Player of the Year, but I think this is usually the time where they give it to the wideout or the running back that had a crazy year, and they couldn't reward him with the MVP. So I think Justin Jefferson ends up getting this one. Pretty crazy too that both Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, a year after they separate from each other, that they both get nominated for Offensive Player of the Year. And Tyreek Hill at one point looked like he was going to win this like pretty convincingly, but then you get a lot of Teddy Bridgewater, you get some Skylar Thompson, the whole second half of the season wasn't as good for the Miami Dolphins, and Tyreek Hill was a part of that. He still finished the year with 119 catches, 1,700 yards, and 7 touchdowns. So an incredible year for Tyreek Hill. The Offensive Rookie of the Year, Brock Purdy, got a nom, I guess, like a Oscar nom. Kenneth Walker, the running back from Seattle, and Garrett Wilson, the wideout from the Jets. Brock Purdy played in 6 games. Was it 5? No, I think it was 6 games. So it's a regular season award. So I don't know how you can give it to Brock Purdy. But Kenny Pickett didn't play in a ton of games either. I'm surprised that, I don't know who else. Chris Olave maybe would have gotten a sniff. Damian Pierce from the Texans was probably on pace for that, and then not great. Breece Hall was awesome for the Jets until he got hurt. But Kenneth Walker, I think, is going to win this one, unless they get swayed by the 6 games for Brock Purdy. That feels like a bit much. AP Defensive Rookie of the Year, Sauce Gardner, Aiden Hutchinson, and Tariq Woolen of Seattle. Sauce Gardner is already probably the best corner in football, which also speaks to, as much as we don't want to give him credit, the New York Jets draft from last year, where they were able to get Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall all in the same draft. So, yeah, if they could only hit on a quarterback, just think if they took Justin Fields, which, again, 2 years ago, going back to that, because we spent so much time talking about that quarterback draft class, and throughout the college season, it was pretty clear-cut that it was Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, nah, you got to check out the Mormon Mahomes. You got to go check out BYU. I'm like, I don't know about this guy. And then Trey Lance also shot up the draft board, too. He didn't even play that year. But they should have just taken Justin Fields. They didn't. Now they're going to be searching for a quarterback. AP Comeback Player of the Year, don't care. AP Coach of the Year. 5 finalists for Coach of the Year. Brian Daboll, Sean McDermott, Doug Peterson, Kyle Shanahan, Nick Sirianni. I would cross McDermott off the list. And I wonder if he got nominated for what the team had to go through at the end of the year. I know they had a good record, but they were supposed to have a good record. And usually those teams, like, you don't see Andy Reid on here. Like, when Bill Belichick was winning the division year after year after year after year, you didn't see Bill Belichick's name on there. So I wonder if the voters were, like, giving him credit for everything that that team went through. I think Sirianni also had a really good team, but he also had a playoff team the year before. So to me, it's really a 3-horse race, Daboll, Peterson, Shanahan. Shanahan took a second and then a third string quarterback and had the second best record in the NFC. I'd still put him third. I think it really comes down to Brian Daboll, Doug Peterson. Both guys took over absolute train wrecks for head coaches. Daboll took over for Joe Judge, Peterson over Urban Meyer, and both made the playoffs this year. Both won a game in the playoffs this year. I would still give it to Daboll, even though the Jacksonville really felt like they were buried from last year. Daniel Jones just isn't as good as Trevor Lawrence. And I know Lawrence had a bad rookie year, but if you gave up on Lawrence after 1 year with Urban Meyer, that's kind of on you. He was like the greatest draft prospect since Peyton Manning. So I think he was going to be able to turn around a little bit. And again, full credit to Doug Peterson for being a part of that turnaround. But I'm going Brian Daboll for taking over that mess of the New York Giants and getting in the playoffs. So give it to Daboll. And then I didn't even realize they did this, but the AP Assistant Coach of the Year and the 3 finalists are Matt Patricia, Joe Judge. No, I'm just kidding. It is Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, who everybody was in love with, but it looks like he's staying there in Detroit. DeMeco Ryans, the 49ers DC, and Shane, is it Steichen, the Eagles offensive coordinator, who Rob Gronkowski called Spike Man, I think, on the Fox broadcast from last week. All good choices, clearly. I'd probably go with Ben Johnson from the Lions, only because nobody thought Jared Goff was going to be any good at all. Nobody thought the Lions were going to be any good at all. They were right in the mix for a playoff spot at the end of the year, and they had one of the best offenses in football, which is wild. Like, I like Amon-Ra St. Brown, but their running backs are, Jamal Williams, who's clearly he's a hilarious character, DeAndre Swift, who actually kind of underachieved, and then Jared Goff, who nobody likes. Even the team that he was with them when they went to the Super Bowl, even they got rid of him. And yet Ben Johnson found a way to get those guys to have one of the best offenses of football and turn things around. So there you go. There are the awards. What you may have noticed is not a Patriot in a sniff at all for any of these. And for the second straight year, didn't you feel like Matt Judon was going to be close or maybe a finalist or kind of in the mix? And then ultimately, and I feel like he closed the season better this year than he did the year before. But still, to get on that Nick Bosa, Chris Jones, Micah Parsons level is a little bit tougher. And also with Judon, too, like the team defense, you lose whatever it was, 6 of your last 8 or 5 of your last 7, whatever it ended up being, and you're giving up a whole bunch of points. I think it's going to be harder to make the case for it. But I don't know, these awards, I get it. I'm into these awards because it's just like we're talking about with the Baseball Hall of Fame before. It's stuff like this that you then end up using years down the line when you're talking about who's a Hall of Famer and who isn't. These are great snapshots of the year. So it's something I still care about. And maybe you do as well. Maybe that's why you're still listening. If you want to join us, you can. 617-779-7937. Andrew Callahan from the Herald will join us to talk about the Patriots offseason coming up. But right now, here is Ben Charleston with What's Trending.
It's the Rich Keefe Show on WEEI. WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
It's been a busy offseason already for the Patriots. And to help us break it down, we turn to the Harbor One Hotline. Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald is now with us. Andrew, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Good to be talking with you, buddy.
All of a sudden, a lot going on here for the New England Patriots. Feels like they were just officially eliminated not that long ago, and yet a big hire to the coaching staff. It was the obvious hire in many ways, Andrew, but your overall thoughts on Bill O'Brien rejoining the staff?
I think common sense finally prevailed. I think sanity prevailed. I think people that I've talked to in and around the building are relieved because, again, they just went through a whole season in which very early on, you felt almost like you were doomed because nothing that you could do could overcome the inexperience of Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. And even with Belichick's involvement, things never got better. So it's a clean slate. It's a fresh start with someone they know who's got, you know, certainly a resume to back it up.
And it still bothers me that this wasn't the hire last year. And is there anything you can point to? Was it just not pulling him away from Nick Saban down at Alabama after just 1 year, or why wasn't this guy already here?
I think there are a couple of reasons. I mean, everyone cites Belichick and Nick Saban having an agreement. I won't poach from your staff. You won't poach from mine. People forget, though, that in the middle of that are a bunch of grown men with their own agency to make their decisions. So Bill O'Brien, you know, certainly could have broken his contract, which is expected or was expected to end at the end of February. The other part about this is, you know, Belichick wants to have some continuity at the position because the system will stay the same, but the way that it's taught and some of the language will change. So he ideally had Patricia, someone that he thinks is seemingly higher up than anyone else within the NFL, there because he knew he would have him for the long term. Obviously, it didn't work out. Now he goes to O'Brien. His contract is up at Alabama. And based on the lack of interest for O'Brien got for head coaching jobs in this cycle and last, he probably figures I have him at least for a couple of years here.
Yeah, but if Mac Jones has a good year, do you think all of a sudden there's going to be some buzz around Bill O'Brien potentially?
Yeah, there could be. But, I mean, If you remember the way he fizzled out in Houston, not only the first coach fired in 2020, but you had very prominent players. J.J. Watt came out and seemed to have this sense of relief. DeAndre Hopkins said he had no relationship with him. Like, owners pick up on that, too. So I don't think, you know, having Mac Jones jump into the ranks of, like, the top 12 quarterbacks in the league is going to erase that. I think he'd probably have to build up a little bit more goodwill before really getting to be the top of the candidate pool.
Any Shrine Bowl conspiracy theories as they tweet out the coaching staff? Steve Belichick not a part of it, although there was later reports that was a misfire, that he should have been included. However, no Matt Patricia, no Joe Judge, no Nick Caley. What does that mean to you?
So Judge and Patricia, I got wind of not going to the Shrine Bowl a couple of days ago. And Patricia, my understanding is, he's undecided about his future with the team. Because as it was reported by NBC Sports Boston, his whole deal with the Lions that was paying the majority, if not all of his salary in New England the last couple of years, is over. He's not getting paid by the Lions anymore. And he's also not calling the shots on offense anymore. So this might be a case of him looking around the NFL, seeing, can I get a job elsewhere that I would want? Of course, meaning uproot his family, go away from Belichick, or get a position here that he probably doesn't want. As far as Judge, I fully expect him to be reassigned on the staff. Where that will be, I don't know, because the special teams coordinator and his assistant, Cam McCord, and Joe Houston are out there at the Shrine Bowl. So I think there's still some moving parts here on offense. And as far as Nick Caley, his contract was up, and he had an interview with the Jets for their OC job. Doesn't look like he'll get it, but he's at least kind of in limbo there. And they said, stay home, we don't need it.
Do you think Caley will end up being somewhere else, or could you see him returning as tight ends coach?
It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, Kaley is the most experienced assistant on the offensive staff. He's also one of the younger guys, still at about 39. So he could say, I could do two more years in New England. I've gotten a couple of interviews this cycle. If I want to go elsewhere, I think it would be hard for Belichick to turn him down. Though he kept Kaley in New England last year when Josh McDaniels wanted to bring him to Las Vegas. So it could go a couple different directions. I think ultimately he'll just decide his best option is probably staying put.
I think another big question that everybody has is offensive line coach, quarterback coach. Is that Bill O'Brien's call? Is it Bill Belichick's call? Or are they going to somehow work together on that?
So I would expect them to work together because obviously there's a lot of overlap in terms of coaches that Bill O'Brien has worked with and trust and the coaches that Bill Belichick has worked with and trust. So it's going to be someone within the middle of that Venn diagram. I think it's interesting, though, that the team has yet to publicly announce the hiring when, of course, this started with them publicly announcing a coaching search.
Right.
And that might be one of the hangups in the negotiation. So I would expect, you know, just no reporting on this, but Bill O'Brien to be the quarterback's coach like he was in 2010 and 2011, and even 2009, last time he called the shots in New England. But the offensive line coach, I think they still need to get settled.
Now, is this going to be, for Mac Jones, the third different playbook in 3 years, or do you envision this looking a lot more very similar to his rookie year?
Very similar to the rookie year. I think, you know, on the media side, when we're reporting from training camp and early in the season, like the messaging around the offense got very messy. And so really what it was a pared-down version of what McDaniels was doing combined with what they attempted to have as like a Shanahan foundation. So a couple things stolen from those Shanahan offenses, but not everything. So really the bones of it was still the old offense. I think what they're going to do is fill that out again, you know, instead of stripping it down, build it back up, build it back out, and add some of the Alabama concepts that Bill O'Brien picked up over the last 2 years down in Tuscaloosa.
We're talking with Andrew Callahan, who covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. What would a successful year for Mac Jones look like? And you can answer that any way you want. It can be stats, it can be wins, it can be eye test, whatever. But for us to look at it and say, wow, what a really good year three that was, what would it look like for you?
Yeah, it's a good question because, I mean, the easy answer used to be Pro Bowl, and then they're giving out Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, like they're penny candy.
Right.
Like he got in his rookie season. So I think, again, you need to see an appreciable jump. For me, statistically, that would be the turnovers, which have really been similar the last 2 years. They come down. You see his accuracy and ball placement go up, and you see a jump in his downfield passing and how effective that's been because I think the opportunities were limited for most of the season last year. When you look at the middle of his season, the beginning too aggressive, you know, late was a little bit better. But I think you just need to see the best version of him. And that really goes for all areas of his game. So, you know, you could tack on another 1,000 yards considering he missed a bunch of games last year, put him around 4,000, over 30 touchdowns, 10 picks, whatever. Just, you need to look at Mac Jones and definitively go, he's better in virtually every area of his game, and if not, most of them.
Can he do that with just the addition of Bill O'Brien, or is this where the true number one wide receiver also comes into play?
No question you need to be elevated by your receiving core. I mean, you know, we look across the league right now, and everyone gets all enamored with Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow, and rightfully so. Like, those guys need help, too. It's not that they're doing this on their own, a la some sort of NBA star, but, of course, the ability to create like Mahomes does, you know, kind of late in the shot clock on third down, does separate him in a way. So Jones needs weapons because you look at the teams that are left, whether it's Cincinnati, Kansas City, Philadelphia, or the Niners, all have elite weapons, okay? You could even go back to last round and say the same thing. The other part about Jones, though, that's more within his control and not relying on the front office is performance under pressure. Because according to PFF, he was the second worst passer under pressure in the entire league, second only to Zach Wilson. So if he gets a little bit better in that area, that should naturally help the rest of his game and his numbers.
We talked about your article, it must have been a couple weeks ago now, with the how to target a number one receiver or what number one receivers would be out there. It's a good list of guys. T. Higgins is the one for me that I would want the most. And let's see what happens with Cincinnati and whatever. They can't pay everybody. Maybe they'll try, and like the Rams and who knows. But is there a guy on that list that you had that you like the most slash is maybe the most likely to happen?
So I'll give you two. My guy that I spent a lot of time in there was Keenan Allen. And it was from a, you know, a production standpoint, a fit, the money, the willingness, the motivation of the Chargers, one of the teams that's headed, you know, like in the fast pass, the fast lane to cap hell, to need to offload some contracts like the one he has before they pay Justin Herbert. The other name is one I didn't spend a ton of time on, and it's Jerry Jeudy from Denver, who fits more to the mold of what you're talking about with T. Higgins. Are they going to pay for him? Do they want to pay for him? There's a lot to be sorted out in Denver, but that's a guy going into the last year of his rookie deal, you know, unless they pick up the fifth-year option here in May. the Patriots could make a deal similar to what they did for Brandon Cooks back in 2017. Hey, here's a first or second round pick. We'll rent him for a season. If it doesn't go well, we'll just trade Jerry Jeudy elsewhere with that fifth year option picked up and then recoup the pick a year later. I think that type of business where it's cost controlled rookie contract with someone very good against man coverage, just like Keenan Allen, mm-hmm. could really benefit this offense, at least even if it's just for one season.
Because you had reported that inside the Patriots, they were split on the real need for a true number one receiver. And my first reaction is that Belichick? Like, once again, thinking that there's other ways to win? Because I think if you just look around the league, like you said, look at the teams that are playing this weekend, last weekend, even the weekend before. Like, they're all, to some degree, loaded, or they at least are top-heavy, and they have a guy that makes the quarterback a lot better. I wonder if Bill is willing to either trade the draft capital for it or pay a ton of money, and in some of these cases, you'd have to do both.
Yeah, and the money part is really interesting because you look through the history, and I can't speak to obviously what they'll do in March, otherwise that story would be written already.
Right.
But you look at their history, they never, ever, 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 ever pay market value for number one wide receivers. And you go, okay, well, they had Randy Moss, they had Wes Welker. Those guys signed initially on a discount, and if they wanted to stick around, had to do it again. So Welker left, obviously, for Denver. They gave up a second-round pick for him to get him from Miami in the first place. And that, I think, is the maximum kind of deal that they would do. Either, you know, we're going to give up some significant draft capital and then you negotiate your deal down if you're DeAndre Hopkins or a Keenan Allen, or we'll pay you. The trouble is, you know, it's going to be tough because the free agent market, Jacoby Myers is at the top of that list. Juju Smith-Schuster is at the top of that list. You're not paying anyone outright. So that, to me, says their history, they won't do it again. But the game has changed, and I think they might need to reevaluate why that's such a key part of the roster building decision-making, because so far, obviously the last 3-4 years, it hasn't helped this offense.
And it feels like from the outside, Robert Kraft really stepped in and said, we need an offensive coordinator and we're not letting Gerard Mayo go. And so then that's when you get the press release and this is what everything that you've had happen. Is there any chance that Robert Kraft is stepping in on more and including a number one receiver and like roster stuff? Or to the best of your knowledge, is that still all a 100% Bill Belichick field?
I can't speak to that specifically. I think it's easier, though, when matters of, let's just say, coaching and contracts and people who would potentially succeed Bill Belichick, you know, are more closely tied to Robert Kraft. Like, he's not going to get involved, I think, in trade decisions or talks or draft picks, like things that are outside of his expertise. But in terms of management, leadership, organizational development, like, that's very much areas where he can step in, especially with the relationship that he has with Gerard Mayo, who looks very much in line to be Bill's successor.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would get involved. I don't think that's also something he wouldn't mind bringing up in conversation, saying, like, this is a simple thing. Look at the teams that are left. Look at the players they have outside the numbers. But as far as really getting into the weeds, I don't think they're there yet.
You mentioned Jacoby Myers earlier, and he is on the top of so many of these wide receiver free agent classes or rankings. Is he going to just price himself out of here, or how much do you think the Patriots are going to try to keep him?
So this is going to be a really interesting free agency. I mean, for the position as a whole, just because the market exploded. Like, you're talking guys getting $18, $19, $20 million per year last season at receiver. We saw that the year before with corners, and then corners came down last March. Does the receiver market come down not only because of the quality of talent, but also this is just sometimes how things go with spending? For Jacoby, I like to say that he's kind of in the friend zone with evaluators. Like, they always like him. He's a good guy. He's not that flashy. You don't really want to make him the feature part of your offense, but you would love to kind of have him around. So, you know, I think you would find probably front offices, if the Raiders want to part with Hunter Renfrow, do you offer Jacoby a contract? They've got money to spend. Houston is going to have a ton of money to spend. Atlanta, where he's from, is going to have a ton of money to spend and a young quarterback. So I think he might get priced out. Right now, projections are about $12, $13, maybe $14 million. I think that would be in the upper range for the Patriots who need him. And if they lose him, they really have to go out there and get someone. But he also wants to be here. So he might be a guy that also, despite those projections, takes a hometown discount.
Talking with Andrew Callahan, who covers the Patriots for the Herald. Everybody would want both, but if you had to choose one, are you going left tackle or number one wide receiver?
I'm going to go door number three and give me a right tackle.
Oh,
I'm
right okay tackle. Okay, fair enough. All right, good.
It's a revolving right door there. Like, you cannot run back the Isaiah Wynn experience of four straight games with a penalty and a sack and then ask Yadni Kajust to get a double team or a chip or a tight end to help him all the way until December and then pass the baton to Connor McDermott. You can't run that again. It affected the whole offense. You got to plug that hole. there to fix this offense.
And defensively, and I know you wrote about this as well, and I agree with you, the cornerback play was better than I thought it was going to be a year after losing J.C. Jackson. However, the final, what was it, seven games where they went up against a stud receiver every game and those guys had their way every game kind of made it pretty glaring. But again, you only have one first-round pick, and who knows if you end up trading that away or whatever, but how can they help themselves out at corner? And I know Jonathan Jones also is a free agent as well.
Yeah, he is. So I think that's going to be an interesting name to watch, much like Jacoby Myers. And Jonathan Jones doesn't fit the Patriots' profile in terms of free agents, not because of the money thing or positionally, but his age. He's going to turn 30 next season. And like we saw with Stephon Gilmore, who had an injury concern, but the Patriots just don't pay, you know, for older cornerbacks. So do they bring him back as kind of a culture driver, a core guy that you can put at safety and inside the slot if you need to? Or do you just say, well, let him go, and we'll sign someone like Jamel Dean, who's going to be 26 from the Bucs, plays very well in man coverage, played a lot of zone down there too. Maybe Cam Sutton from Pittsburgh, who had some of the best numbers in man-to-man coverage in a small sample for the Steelers, get younger, keep that speed, and then go into the draft. I think this is a position that either way, with Jonathan Jones on board or him waving goodbye on his way out of town, they double dip because you need to develop this depth, I think, even with Marcus Jones and Jack Jones. Because we all know Jack Jones was suspended at the end of the year, and his draft profile did not read a whole lot about good decision-making off the field. It's just someone you can't trust to be there all the time. And in my mind, that says get a veteran, get a rookie, and then let the dice and kind of roll from here.
Yeah, that was a weird end of the year where both Jack Jones and Jake Bailey were suspended by the team. What was the update on Jake Bailey, or has there been one? Because I know his agent was like, we didn't do anything wrong, and we're actually going to file a grievance against the team. Whatever happened with that?
So the only update I have for you is really like not within the journalistic realm. It's just that he deleted his Instagram recently. So
oh,
Jake Bailey is
wow.
gone dark. He's gone dark.
Off Instagram. That must have been real bad. Holy smokes.
Yeah. And the trouble goes beyond the suspension. It's not just, hey, you missed the last couple of games and a couple of game checks. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that it voids all the guarantees built into his contract, which was extended in the summer, that made him one of the highest paid punters in the entire league. So whether or not he wins this grievance with his agent, there seems to be a real disconnect here between him and the team about not only just the grounds in which he was suspended, but also, hey, you're nice. Taking my money. You're taking the money that you gave to me just 6 months ago. Yes, he underperformed, but he still sees himself as someone who earned that despite whatever happened behind the scenes. I think they're just kind of in a holding pattern, though, until the grievance is resolved.
That's just a wild. I mean, it was such a mess of a season. Then you add on to it, oh, yeah, the punter is filing a grievance against you. It's like, okay, great. Tom Brady came out with a very awkward answer to Jim Gray's question, which he definitely did not see coming about his future. He swore and everything else. But what do you think, where do you think Tom Brady is playing next year? Or I guess, do you think he's playing next year?
It's a good question. I've been leaning in a camp that, you know, initially he retires. Okay, then he'll come back to Tampa Bay because you just don't get divorced to go 8-10 and then call it quits. Like,
right.
you come back, you go 8-10 and say, I need to fix this because football is, again, back to being my entire life. You know, for him, though, someone had a video of him checking out schools in Miami today. Can you roll out the Dolphins? Like, talk about bad decision-making down there and their quarterback situation. I really don't know. I want to ask the question, is it okay right now, as great as he was here, unprecedented, best player of all time, just to be a little sick of Tom Brady? Like, can I just wait until March and we all can just let him make his own time? Because I get his standing in the league. It's just, you know, there seems to be more drama around him than ever before. And maybe it's just living in Florida for all these years. But I want to give the man some time.
No, you're right. And it was funny when they were playing in the wild card round. That was one of the questions we were asking on this show. Just be like, is everybody numb to it? Like, are you rooting for him, against him? Or you're like, all right, like, okay, we get it. And especially when this year where, you know, that team was a mess too, and they had a losing record and all that. So it wasn't quite as exciting for sure. Lastly, before we get you out of here, who do you got winning this weekend?
Give me the Eagles in the NFC. I think the Brock Purdy experience finally comes to the old rookie quarterback resolution we all know and expect. And then I think Patrick Mahomes in one leg pulls this out against the Bengals. But I think that game, I think, will be one of the best of the entire season. I cannot be more excited for 6:30 Sunday night.
I agree with you completely. He's Andrew Callahan. You can check him out at the Boston Herald, where he covers the Patriots. Thanks so much for the time tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road.
You got it. Anytime, Rich.
All right, Andrew Callahan joining us on the Harbor One Hotline. And going back to Jacoby Myers, interesting case or interesting free agency it's going to be, because he is one of the best wide receivers available. Now, I don't think he is a number one wide receiver, and even a number two, it probably really depends on who the number one is. He was pretty productive Mac Jones's rookie year. He had 83 catches, 866 yards, but only two touchdowns. This year, the catches and the yards went down. He missed a few games, but the touchdowns went up. He's also the only receiver to have played with Tom Brady, Cam Newton, and Mac Jones. So he's experienced all of it. Also, Josh McDaniels and the Matt Patricia experience. So he's had all of that. He was a good find, and if you go back to it too, undrafted, super productive player at North Carolina State. And then they draft N'Keal Harry in the first round that year, who was an immediate bust. And Jacoby Myers turned into a pretty solid player. But how much money can you pay him? Like, they're already overpaying some of their other receivers, at least based on the production that they're getting. So I wonder how much Bill O'Brien will have a say in any of this. And when he's talking to Belichick, will he say, listen, I see something here. Like, we need to keep this guy. But if you keep him, and we've heard, you know, even Robert Kraft, and sort of they have percentages of the cap sort of to each position or in their mind, right? Like, they're not going to pay their quarterback too much because then you can't pay other spots. So even though, again, you can argue around and around about the salary cap and how it really doesn't matter, there is at some point real money that has to be spent. And there is at some point some level of money that you can't just throw it all. Like, I don't know if you can bring back Jacoby Myers and get a true number one receiver. And if it's one or the other, like, I'll take the number one guy. And whether it's Keenan Allen, who Callahan likes a lot, or if it's T. Higgins, I don't even know if T. Higgins will be available. But are the Bengals going to be in a spot where they can pencil in some money for whatever Joe Burrow is going to get, which is going to be an insane amount? By the way, if he wins the next two games that he plays this year, he'll probably be the highest paid quarterback. Then you got Jamar Chase you're going to have to pay. Then you're going to have to pay T. Higgins. You got some good players on defense. So Cincinnati's going to be an interesting spot, who they can and who they can't pay, or who they choose to pay and who they choose not to. But I would rather have T. Higgins, I think everybody would, over Jacoby Myers. But are you just going to let Myers go? And then you're like, well, you got Devontae Parker and Tyquan Thornton and Kendrick Bourne. Like, no, you still want Myers. So that, to me, is going to be a pretty fascinating one to see what Bill does there. Like, how many of their own guys do they prioritize in free agency versus guys on the outside? Bill, of course, had that famous line about they're 27th in team spending this past year. So I feel like this past offseason, they didn't spend a lot. Two off seasons ago, they spent a lot, but that was only to get back to a certain level. This could be a really active offseason for them. At least it should be. We all hope that it is. All right, we will wrap up this program with Is That It? Coming up next, and we'll check in on our bet du jour, see how those are going here on the Rich Keefe Show.
It's the Rich Keefe Show on WEEI.
Boston's Sports Original.
All right, wrapping things up here on the Rich Keefe Show, WEEI, on this Wednesday night. No Celtics or Bruins in action tonight. Bruins winners yesterday because they win every single game. Celtics lost their second in a row. Both will be in action tomorrow. So you got the Bruins and the Lightning, which should be a good one. And then Celtics and the Knicks, see how they bounce back. It also sounds like the Celtics are going to be a lot more healthy for that one. Marcus Smart still expected to be out. But Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Malcolm Brogdon should all be back. And I think, I have a feeling that that's going to help a lot. Let's check in on the bet du jours. Of course, every night on the program around 6:45 or so, we give you picks for the night. And Ben, not great.
Things are not going well for us.
No. So I took the over 231.5 in Rockets Wizards. Not having it. It's 81-71 at the end of three. That's not going to be good enough. By the way, did you see Kyle Kuzma? So Kuzma had a crazy night last night. He was really good in the Wizards' win over the Mavericks. Did you see the outfit he was wearing? He's one of these guys that always wears like a wild...
I'm guessing it was something ridiculous.
Yeah, like his whole chest was exposed, but his head was covered. Yeah, so he had like a thing like his arms were covered. So I think it was like a sweater, but it was missing like the chest part.
The chest area, the most important part?
Yeah. No, that was bare. And then he had like a mask almost, but it was like part of the sweater. So he had like eye holes and a mouth hole, and it is outrageous.
That just sounds very tough to put on.
Sounds terrible. He's worn some ridiculous. He was the guy that wore that sweater where like the collar was like bigger than the whole shirt. He had like an awesome night though last night. He had like 30 points. You're like, oh, I guess you can wear whatever you want.
Bust that outfit out again.
Yeah. Yeah, he did, and they won. So I don't know what he wore tonight, but I'm sure it was wild. So I don't like that one. Now, you took Giannis over in points, right?
29.5. Mm-hmm. So he does have 20 at the end of three.
Oh,
so...
no, you got it, I think. He'll turn it on.
I got a chance. They're also up like 10, so I need it to stay a little bit closer.
Yeah, and this game sucks, too, as an NBA fan, that second night of a back-to-back, the Nuggets are in Milwaukee. You're like, oh, here we go, Giannis Jokic. Nope, no Jokic. No Michael Porter, no Jamal Murray. All those guys sat out.
Hey, Nuggets, you're just top players. Yeah. We're just not going to play them.
Nope. So
we're
just going to give Milwaukee the win is at least what it looks like here. They're up 11 early in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, not ideal. And then we've also been keeping an eye on the 76ers and the Nets, two teams that hate each other. So I like that. There's some good bad blood. It seems like Joel Embiid was either getting shoved or shoving somebody or talking trash throughout most of the game. 76ers are pulling away. They're up 14 in the fourth quarter. And we were talking about this off the air. At one point, Ben Simmons was guarding James Harden. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, what a mess for both teams. Like, last year, they make that flip. I mean, it's a lot worse for the Nets. But then again, Ben Simmons, once Durant comes back, like, Ben Simmons should be as good as he possibly can be on a team that has Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You know, Ben Simmons is up to 12 points tonight.
I almost bet the under. I think it was like 8.5, and so yeah. I'm glad he did not.
Oh, it's always a really low number for him, but he's up to 12 points, 5 of 7 from the field. Jeez. It's a career night for Simmons, who was all NBA like not that long ago. It's kind of crazy the way what happened to him. Joel Embiid is, I think, making another push this month for MVP votes. I think he's probably like a distant fifth right now when you're looking at like odds. But he's having a decent night, 22-8, with, again, most of the quarter left to go. All right, so tomorrow on the show, I'm excited to bring in Rob Bradford for a couple hours because we've had a lot of big baseball topics. I still want to get his thoughts on the winter weekend and then how Chaim Bloom kind of responded and how even, like, his interview since then. I think he talked to MLB Network today. Chaim Bloom, not Rob Bradford. And just how he's handled this whole weird offseason where, yeah, they've made a couple of good moves. They've also made some terrible moves. They've also just didn't bring back their quote-unquote top priority. So it's been a real mess. Then you throw in the fact that all the John Henry stuff was edited out of the Nesson version. It's like, oh, my God, they just can't get out of their own way. And even though maybe I shouldn't be, I'm still, like, passionate about the Hall of Fame voting, and Bradford is a Hall of Fame voter. So we'll get his thoughts on how he thinks this whole process is going. Not that I think it's ever going to really change. I feel like they're pretty much cemented into this. And there's going to be less guys popping up on the ballot now that are just like roid guys, or at least synonymous with roids. Like, we're getting past that generation where everybody on there, you're just going to have to vote them in, whether you like them as a player or not, and not trying to guess if they're all hopped up on goofballs or not. So that'll be a good discussion with Bradford. So that'll be 7-9 tomorrow. And then also, our wrestling insider, Jason Rossi, is going to return. We had him on to talk about the potential sale of the WWE, so we'll get the update on that. Seems like it's kind of quieted down a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that not happening? Was that like a, hey, we're going to sell, let's get some attention
but
on
like,
this?
But, like, Vince is back, and, like, Rossi even said it's like an episode or even a season from Succession where, like, he came back in after putting, like, his kid on the board, and then, like, they got rid of a few people. His daughter, Stephanie, left. It's really weird what the hell is going on there.
It seems like it's basically they're going to bring in the wrestling drama to the office.
Yep. That's seemingly what they're doing. And, like, the on-air product's actually been, like, a lot of fun, so I don't know if that's going to change or that's going to be impacted by it. And then one of my favorite events of the year, the Royal Rumble, is this Saturday night. So all of a sudden, you get yourself a hell of a sports weekend. Royal Rumble Saturday, then the AFC and the NFC Championship on Sunday. NFC is the early game, then you get the AFC. So we haven't even really hit on that at all this week, so we'll get into that tomorrow as well, where you have really four great teams, two really, really good matchups. Patrick Mahomes practiced today, so no surprise, he'll be out there. Mahomes, Burrow. And then on the other side, you got two just really well-built teams. So I think any of the potential Super Bowl matchups would be a good one. So we'll unpack that a little bit more tomorrow. Plus, we'll have our eyes on Celtics and the Bruins. So again, the Bruins are legitimately going for the best record in the history of the hockey regular season. That's very much within their reach. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks to Andrew Callahan and Nick Fryer for joining the program tonight. Thanks to Ben, another great job trending and producing the program. That'll do it for this edition of the Rich Keefe Show. Have a great rest of your night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at 6:00.